This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You are listening to a special edition Place to Be Nation podcast, WWE Stomping Ground 2019 reaction show with Chris Zellner and Devin Hales.
You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is...
Hi, Place to Be Nation Universe. Welcome back to the WWE Pay-Per-View Reaction Series. I'm your host, Chris Zellner. Joined as always on our reaction series by the Oracle of WWE, Devin Hales. And Devin, we have some stomping grounds to discuss here. It's time to kick ass and take some names.
Yes, as Nancy Sinatra plays in the background.
What is your thoughts on this new name for Pay-Per-View? You think we're going to go another year with this, or is this a one and done?
I would guess it's a one and done. I mean, I could be wrong, but I feel like every year there's always, like, you know, at least...
Great Balls of Fire!
Right, yeah, there you go. Yeah, there's at least one and done, I think.
And wasn't that June, too?
Yes.
There you go. There you go.
Same time. Yep.
Just bring back Great American Bash. It's not that hard.
Yes, I agree.
But anyway, this pay-per-view has had some negative energy around it going in. WWE television has not been strong lately. The numbers of tickets sold for this show was not very good at all. And, I mean, WWE's kind of in like a holding pattern, stagnant right now. And which, you know, this is stuff they do. You know, this isn't the first time we've had this happen. And this time of year. So, what do you think? I mean, where do you think the WWE is right now?
I don't think they're in a particularly good position. It's my guess that they're probably holding off on big stuff until the build to SummerSlam and then the subsequent build to SmackDown on Fox. But if they are doing that, I don't think it's a particularly good idea to do that. Particularly with all the, you know, the AEW buzz and whatnot, you know, they've got to start making things a little bit more interesting. And we were talking about how they should do that at Money in the Bank, and that was, you know, ended up being a good show, and they really didn't do that, you know.
Nope.
And in some ways, it was kind of worse leading up to this show. So I guess they're just going to keep on being stagnant until, you know, oh, we got to make SummerSlam interesting. We got to make the move to Fox interesting. But I don't think that that's a good idea in the climate that it is today.
The main event programs are all boring.
Yes.
You know, that's the big problem right now. And we'll talk about that as we go along, because that definitely affected this show. But, I mean, it's a problem they're going to have to figure out. And, I mean, they could be waiting until SummerSlam, like we're saying. I mean, they need to build that. And, of course, SmackDown going to Fox. But, yeah, I mean, this is a different time and place in the wrestling industry. You know, they're not riding solo, basically, right now. AEW, you know, had a successful pay-per-view in the first time out. And they've got more shows coming. And you know, their TV will be starting up soon, so yeah. I mean, they're gonna have to get a fire lit, and we'll see what happens after this show. But tonight was kind of a tale of two shows, so let's go ahead and get started. We have the pre-show, where the only match of the pre-show was the three-way for the Cruiserweight Championship, as Tony Nese defending against Drew Gulak and Akira Tozawa. I was not at home for the pre-show, so I missed this match, although I heard it was a really good match. Drew Gulak won the match, finally wins a championship after being in that division since the start and being on there 3 years. And going through a couple of different gimmick changes, and it's changed his gimmick again, and finally got the gold. So your thoughts on the match, and Drew Gulak finally grabbing the brass ring.
The match was good. I thought they worked it in a smart way, in the sense that they basically did a bunch of impressive double team moves and hit a bunch of crazy stuff in a decent amount of time, and it was a lot of fun to watch. The crowd got into it, and it ended up being a very good match. I'm a huge fan of Gulak. I know you are. I'm really happy to see him win the belt there. I think Tony Nese has improved a lot, and I think he's had a pretty good year in the ring, but he's a stale champion. I don't think he's the best option to be the champion at 205 Live. And Gulak is someone who is a great choice to anchor that division, and particularly the heel side. Buddy Murphy was very good as a heel champion, and I'm ready to see another heel champion, particularly somebody like Gulak, have some great title defenses on TV, because he's had an awesome year, really on both 205 and NXT TV with the Kushida feud and the Riddle match from back in February. He's been excellent this year, and as you mentioned, you know, he's been through some character changes since he's been in WWE, and he's been able to show that he can be a sports entertainment type character with the PowerPoint gimmick but still, you know, go back to his roots of being the badass submission specialist heel, which he kind of turned back into in recent weeks and won the belt with. So he's got a lot of range and he's dynamic, and I'm glad to see him be successful.
I know we sound like a broken record when we talk about 205 Live on these reaction shows, but they got to get some new talent in that show.
Yes, they do. They finally brought in Chad Gable last week, and he had a really good match with Jack Gallagher. So hopefully they use Gable more often. He's doing this weird thing where he's like making fun of Apollo Crews for getting dissed or beat up by Zelina and Andrade. So on SmackDown every week, but I don't know if that's leading to anything. But you know, he did have the match on 205 last week, and I hope he gets used there more often, because you are right, it desperately needs some refreshing. On that roster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll see what the reign of Gulak holds in store for us. So at least it's something different. That's that much. All right. Main show. Raw Women's Championship to open the show. This should have been a sign of things to come. Becky Lynch defends against Lacey Evans. And for those that have not been really watching the television, and I'd say the last couple of weeks, it was hit again tonight that Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch are in a relationship together. So when WWE goes public with something like this, as public as they're going, that should have been a sign that something's up. Because they normally don't do that. So we'll have more on that later. Regarding the match itself, fans are into Becky. Lacey, she's improving in the ring as she goes along. And this was a fine match. Lacey was thrown to the wolves, and when she wasn't really ready for the big push she's getting in the ring, she's ready as a character. She's done a really good job as a character. But as far as in the ring, she hasn't got to that yet, but she's getting better. And this match showed that. So there is something there. We'll see where they go from here. But Becky gets the win with a disarmer. Noted that Lacey tapped out very quickly. And, yeah, again, fine match. But, you know, not your typical opener for the WWE show. Usually they'll open up with, like, the tag titles or, you know, a hot singles match. So running this first, again, should have told us a story for what was to come. So your thoughts on all that and the match itself?
The match was okay. It was better than their first match from Money in the Bank. Lacey still struggles with basing and setting up for offense and taking offense. I've been on Becky the past couple weeks on social media and whatnot because her spot calling has been pretty egregious. That's probably in part to Lacey's inexperience.
Yeah, I think she had to Becky.
Yeah, she. I mean, it's very noticeable she was calling the match. To my irritation, a little bit, to be honest, but I can be, you know, somewhat forgiving there. I did like that Lacey was always scrambling to the ropes and submissions, and you know, it's like you said, it's worth taking note that she tapped out quickly at the end. But you know, I think that's how you should work in submissions. You know, with you know the occasional like thing where you kind of stay in there, but the WWE trope people just like constantly just fighting through submissions for 4 or 5 minutes is a bit annoying. And I liked seeing that not happen here. Lacey's gotten pretty good on offense. She's got creative offense. She uses it well. Right person won, I think. And it definitely was an interesting deal to have that match open the show. The last time I remember, you know, other than WrestleMania, which usually opens with the main event, you know, match nowadays, I think it was like the Cena Ambrose Styles triple threat match for the WWE title the night of 2016 presidential debate. I think it was they opened that like No Mercy 2016 with that match. So that's the last time anything has, you know, basically on a B pay-per-view has opened a show like that. So like you said, there was definitely a reason for that. And that's sort of, that was a big signal that I don't think a lot of people saw, nor did I really.
Well, to be honest, who was? We'll talk about later on.
I know, right.
That they exactly. Don't normally do. But yeah, and for that to be so decisive, I mean, tell me, you know, Extreme Rules is coming up, so you know they're not starting a new program just yet. So again, something is going to happen. So we'll get to that later on. Caleb Braxton caught Paul Heyman leaving Baron Corbin's locker room and talked to him, and he said that, well, both Kofi and Rollins are here, and that's it. Walked away. So we get the tease of Brock. Of course, he's not going to be in Tacoma. And tease of maybe Heyman being the referee. Corbin told Kayla that he picked his referee, who's unbiased, and he'll do a Brock Lesnar after he wins the title. So there you go. Next match, which probably normally would have been the opening match. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus New Day's Big E and Xavier Woods. And I really dug this match. I really dug the beginning of the match as Owens and Sami just took it to Xavier and hitting big spot after big spot. And Xavier just kept kicking out. That's a different way of opening a WWE match. That don't happen a whole lot. So I thought that was fresh. Big E finally got involved and, you know, it became a good back and forth match. And we get all the big spots, of course. Big E hits his big spear on Sami Zayn, as only Big E can, through the ropes to the floor. Owens hit Xavier with his stunner, and Xavier had a tremendous sell for just doing a complete 180 in the air. And Owens and Zayn get the win, which was the right call in my decision in this case. And further kind of got people's suspicions up on the status of the New Day in the future, which we'll see. But your thoughts on the match? And I mean, Owens and Zayn had to win this, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they did. They've been losing every single time, and just constantly losing in clean fashion. This was a big time needed win for them. I thought that was the right choice. Match was great. It reminded me of like, I guess maybe like an All Japan tag from the 90s where, you know, Misawa or Kobashi or whoever would get destroyed for 10 minutes and kick out of big moves by themselves after one, you know, after the other one was knocked off the apron and they couldn't make the tag. That's always a tag team trope that I enjoy, and it's used often.
Exactly, as you mentioned.
So it was nice. It was nice to see. Xavier's great at playing the underdog, so he was great in that role. Big E's an awesome hot tag. He was exceptional there as always. He hit his crazy spear again, which he hasn't done in a long time. You know, he's just come back from injury, saving that for a bigger match. And he hit it here. Of course, that led to the finish with the stunner. Xavier kind of had like a Shane McMahon sell to the stunner. It wasn't quite as cartoonish, but it kind of reminded me of like when Shane would like freeze up and like make his whole body stiff as he went in the air. That's a fun way to sell a stunner. Great match though. And Zayn and Owens definitely needed this win.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I mean, we're in that period, so who knows? But I guess that we're probably going to get some type of I don't know if we'll get a six man, or I saw some people say we're going to get a triple threat at Extreme Rules: Owens, Ziggler, and Kofi.
Yeah, I saw so, that.
Obviously, Owens and Zayn are still going to be aligned with New Day no matter what, even though, again, Owens and Zayn are on separate shows. But we have that great wild card rule that's in effect that I love so
fantastic.
Much. And, So, we'll see. Who knows? All right. For me, really good match, though. Can't discount that. All right. So, show's running good so far. We got, we had three good to really good matches. Everything's flowing along. Next, we get Nikki Cross and Alexa in the back doing their little thing. And Nikki's on Alexa's side now regarding Bayley. So it's them against the world, Alexa said. Then we get the United States title match. Samoa Joe defending against Ricochet. The story here is, will Samoa Joe finally have a pay-per-view match that's longer than a couple of minutes? Well, he does. and this was a really strong match. Another one. Lots of good high spots here. Fans were into it. Ricochet. And these two work well together. I mean, Ricochet fits Joe's style. And Joe was able to look impressive against Ricochet. He was able to bump hard for him and sell for him. Joe got the Kikina clutch. Ricochet went for the 630. Joe moved. Then Ricochet landed on his feet, hit the code breaker, then hit the 630 perfect to win. He got the title. The right guy won the match. The fans popped big. And then we got something completely out of the ordinary by WWE. So Ricochet, they show him going through the curtain to Gorilla, where this is the crew of people that were standing there waiting to congratulate him. First man, Seth Rollins. So you got your, the Universal Champion right there. Then you have Hawkins and Ryder, Carmella, Charlotte Flair, and Heavy Machinery. Standing there, Charlotte Flair standing there with all these baby faces. It was just blew my mind. And then Ricochet, he shaking hands with them. And then Triple H shows up and they, do their thing. He hugs them and stuff. And
Shane Helms
passed him on the back in a cameo role. And then as that happened, the Heavy Machinery just started walking towards the ring. They played their music. And they transitioned them right going through the curtain. I really liked that whole scenario there. I thought that presentation was good because they never see anything like that. So thoughts on the match, thoughts on the presentation, and what the hell is Charlotte Flair doing there?
Match was very good. I think Ricochet has really found his own in the WWE. I think his style is a style that is better served in the WWE setting because it can be toned down and sort of minimized. And I think that's a good thing in the high flying that he does. And I think he's learned to utilize it and plug spots and whatnot into his matches very well. Joe's, you know, very strong presence, has actually had quite a good year in the ring this year. He seems to be really on a roll, and even in the ring this year, which I'm glad to see. Very good match. I was surprised to see Ricochet win. But it, you know, it was a nice surprise. Crowd loved it. I was not expecting the little curtain call / gorilla segment, but it was really well done. And, you know, I think it was sort of a way to say, hey, Ricochet's a big star, or we want to make him an important part of the roster. He won this major mid-card title against the major force in Samoa Joe. This is a big deal. Let's go from here. Especially with a Triple H cameo at the end. As far as Charlotte Flair being with the group, I think that was part of one of those deals where she's like one of the faces of WWE. That's part of it. Another thing is, you know, she hasn't been on TV in almost a month. And I would not be shocked to see that this was the beginning of another turn for Charlotte. Charlotte's had so many turns. She's kind of become Big Show and Kane territory in the number of turns, or Braun territory as well, which doesn't hurt her. It does hurt her is what I mean. It doesn't help her, but I could be wrong there. But you know, I think it's a mix of her being someone that they consider to be one of the faces of the company, and as well as being, you know. Also from NXT, you know, that just came to my mind just now. You know, all those people from NXT, you know, outside of Hawkins and Ryder, but you know, those were NXT people, and that, I'm sure that had a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah, just weird, just weird. I mean, they could turn, but I don't know. I don't know. That's.
Yeah,
I've seen people think that Bailey's turning heel. So I mean, a double turn. It's just one of those things. I thought that was just interesting to say the least. All right, next we get the SmackDown Tag Title match: Daniel Bryan and Rowan defending against Heavy Machinery, Otis and Tucker. They're in Tacoma, Washington, so they're in Daniel Bryan territory. And they were all into him. And they were chanting all kinds of Daniel Bryan-esque chants. Drive a Prius is one of them. And we recycle. We recycle.
Yeah.
So the Pacific Northwest was into this. They basically kept the match, you know, the psychology as it would be in any other town. You know, Bryan and Rowan still were teal. Tim Schuster were big bases. Fans really didn't care. This was probably the best show Heavy Machinery's had on the main roster. They look really strong here. And Bryan was great in his part in doing that. And I thoroughly enjoyed Otis in this match, especially, you know, his stuff with Rowan and everything. So they did a good job of making them look like they should have been involved here. And then even the finish, you know, where Bryan used the small package. Mr. Small Package on Tucker to get the win, so didn't have to even use one of his big kill shots. So I enjoyed this match a lot. And, of course, Bryan and Rowan definitely were the right team to win. So what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, this was another really good match. It was a little odd, but certainly expected to have the heel team being cheered and the face team not really getting any positive reaction. But, you know, it is what it is. I thought they worked the match well. I thought that they did actually a pretty good job of not really overblowing Heavy Machinery early in the babyface stuff, because they would have gotten booed out of the building. I think that was partially intentional, in the fact that, you know, you guys are not going to get cheered. Don't try to get too wild. You know, They did towards the end of the match, but I think the crowd actually popped for some of that stuff, you know, like when Otis slammed Rowan and the even the warm spot got a bit of a pop. But they worked a strong match. Brian was great, as you said. And the Otis Rowan section was awesome. Highlight of the match. And Brian pulled out the small package. Right team won. This was fun stuff. I liked it.
Yeah, absolutely. It did what it needed to do. And Brian and Rowan retain their titles, and we'll see where they go from there. Brian just seems, it is interesting seeing Brian in this position right now in the company. Where he's, you know, just in his little tag title deal. He's not any of the main stories and everything. And it's interesting to see how he's positioned. But, you know, we'll see if that changes.
Yeah, it is.
We'll see if that changes as we go along. All right. Next, we have the SmackDown Women's title. Bayley defending against Raw's Alexa Bliss. Wild card rule, everybody.
Wild card.
Alexa had the early advantage. She was giving it to Bayley. It ended up being back and forth. Nikki got involved as Bayley tried to get a suicide dive. Alexa pushed Nikki in the way. Then Alexa hit a sunset flip bomb on the floor. Twisted Bliss. Nikki came in the ring because she's mad at Bayley for hitting her with the suicide dive. Referee got Nikki out of the ring. Bayley went up after Alexa. Alexa got the Twisted Bliss. Bayley got her knees up. Hit the Bayley to win. So Bayley retains the title. I'm guessing we're going to get Bayley and Nikki next. Here's what I think would be an interesting deal if they would do this. Now, I want to get your thoughts. They should have Nikki beat Bayley for the title. And Alexa gets so pissed off that that happens. And that's how you do the Nikki-Alexa split. That's how I think they should go. If they're gonna do Bayley Nikki deal here, which it looks like they're gonna do, that's how you do it, right? So, I'll get your thoughts on that.
First, as far as the match goes, I thought it was fine. I think Bayley and Alexa have had better matches. Back in 2017, I even think they had better matches, and a feud that was panned by a lot of people. I thought the match.
Well, I had a question in my mind. Do you think Alexa is still fully not back to form yet after being out for so long?
Yes, I think that's a big part of it. You know, she worked a longer match for the first time in what, nine months? She's actually looked quite good in shorter matches. You know, she's been training with Mike Quackenbush. She put up those videos of her training with Quack and she's clearly attempting to get better. I thought she looked really good in that triple threat match where she won the number one contendership against Charlotte and Carmella a few weeks back. She didn't look all that great. But you know, that's probably somewhat ring rust, somewhat not good, you know, not being used to working longer matches in a long time. And, you know, she still has work to do for sure. I think she's certainly competent, but she still has some things she needs to work on. But, you know, as a whole, the match was okay. In some ways, I was kind of waiting for the Nikki involvement, you know, and we got to that tope spot, and finish was done well. I think Bayley was the right person to win because Alexa clean sweep Bayley so badly in 2017, it made Bayley irrelevant for about 2 years, at least as a singles competitor. It was nice to see Bayley get that win. I think as far as your idea of with Nikki, I think that's a good idea. Mainly because I think it would make Nikki Cross a formidable and valuable player in the women's division. You know, it puts her over and makes her look strong and makes her look good. And, you know, I'd have her win the feud against Alexa, you know, if they went that route. You know, and then have somebody else beat her later, you know, later down the road. I think that they, you know, it's about making some people at least, you know, relatively like stars. Because we're getting to the point where we're going to Fox on SmackDown, and you know, stuff like that's important. You know, even though I know, you know, Alexa and Nikki are on Raw right now, but my point is star power and stuff like that's going to be important come fall, because particularly with a show that's on Fox, Fox will cancel you, you know, if you're getting 1.8 TV ratings. So you're going to start making more stars and start making more creative storylines and interesting storylines. And that's just one very small example, but one that I think would be helpful in the long run. You know, give Nikki Cross a win over Bayley. Make that part of the story where, you know, Alexa's jealous and angry and turns, you know, back full heel. Because, I mean, she really is a heel right now, but she's sort of, you know, playing the tweener role a little bit. You know, and part of that is because she's so popular with a lot of fans. But I mean, you know, there were dueling chants in the match tonight. So, you know, but yeah, I think it's a good way to get Nikki to the top of the division and make her a big-time player.
Yeah, I agree. And she's done very well in this role. That's for sure. regarding that, you know, the 1.8 rating, you said if they did a 1.8 on Fox, I thought Fox would probably still be happy because some of their stuff don't go into nothing like that. Yeah, woof.
True.
But yeah, I mean, we'll see. The women's division for SmackDown is definitely a crapshoot. That's for sure. And even more of a crapshoot because, you know, the main contender is a Raw roster, you know, talent. So sucks for those women.
Right.
All right. Next, yep. We get the thing of all the things that's gone on in WWE in this last month. Maybe the most interesting thing that is taking place in that company, at least social media wise, the 24/7 championship update. They showed the clips of Drake Maverick beating Truth on SmackDown, dressed up as Carmella with his falsies, and R-Truth regaining the title at Drake Maverick's wedding, as Drake and his lovely wife Renee Michelle walked up the aisle, and all of a sudden a referee shirt shows up. Great cam work on how that was presented. And then all of a sudden, here's Truth out of nowhere getting a schoolboy on Drake to win the title at Drake's wedding. Then they showed the tweet where Renee tweeted out that juggling she wanted a divorce. They showed Drake sitting at a bar with his tie wrapped around his head and around a bunch of empty bottles of alcohol. And today on a Twitter, Drake tweeted a video out of him sitting still in his suit from his wedding on a bench, on a park bench, as the Sounds of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel start playing. And all of a sudden he's sitting there, he's despondent, and he pulls out his wanted poster for the 24/7 title, and he kind of snaps out of it. And now he's back on his chase again. It's amazing, folks. I mean, I've tweeted this out on Twitter on Tuesdays. This last Tuesday was the first time that I didn't do it. But it has been for the past 2 weeks that the 24/7 segments on Raw and SmackDown, and because they put the clips up after the TV show goes off. So let's just say between 10 and 11 p.m. on Tuesday night and then 11 to midnight on Monday. I will check them at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon the next day. And those 24/7 clips have been a million, 2 million plus in that amount of time. And I know there's people from foreign countries watching. I don't really care. To get that many hits in that short of time, that says something. That there's people that are interested in this, they're watching this. And the thing is this, but I mean, there's been a lot of great social media stuff around this whole thing, whether it be in Jinder Mahal, in the golf course with R-Truth, or the airport, on the airplane, and now the Drake Maverick stuff here. They've really got something going on here that's just so different from what they normally do. So, what's your thoughts on the whole evolution of the 24/7 championship?
Well, I think it's great. I think they've picked the right guy to take charge early in R-Truth. I think it does a good job of highlighting undercard wrestlers like Truth. You know, of course, he's always kind of highlighted because he's so good at what he does. But, you know, a guy like Drake Maverick and Jinder gets back on the spotlight a little bit. And you got EC3 who's involved. And you know, Cedric Alexander. I mean, all these people get to be involved in some way, shape, or form. Titus as well. It highlights undercard wrestlers. And I think they're finally taking advantage of what social media has to offer. I always have kind of thought using social media in this way would be a genius idea, and they finally started to figure things out, and they're really starting to formulate something special with this title. They're getting a lot of hits, as you mentioned, and it's one of the more entertaining segments on Raw and SmackDown every week. It's the live crowds are loving it. It's a ton of fun to watch. It creates and adds variety to a show that's oftentimes stale and boring, and it's a really nice breath of fresh air, and there's a whole lot more they can do with it.
Absolutely. So we'll see what happens as we go along and who else will be involved. So it's definitely giving people that wouldn't be on television, like you said, television time. Exactly. Right. Whether it's silly or not, whatever you think it is, it's serving a purpose. It's definitely doing that.
Correct.
All right. Next, we get Ricochet. He's taking photos for WWE.com. All of a sudden, Anderson and Gallo show up. They want to take a photo with him, and that sets up AJ Styles showing up. And he joins in, and he tells Ricochet he'll see him tomorrow on Raw. Well, that sounds awesome, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And you know what? That is a great, new, fresh story and feud there. And AJ and Ricochet, I mean, right. Man, that could be really, really fucking good. So, I'm ready for this one. This will all be interesting. To see AJ being used to be the guy, one of the guys to push Ricochet to that next level. So,
yep,
definitely great stuff here. Coming up. All right, next we get Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre with Shane McMahon at ringside. This was better than WrestleMania. I'll definitely say that for this match. Roman Reigns, let's talk about Roman Reigns' dive. That dude got so much hype on that dive, that almost was a disaster. He luckily Drew kind of caught him in the air. Because he totally overshot him, and that could have been extremely nasty if he landed on his head or neck first. We could have a serious problem. But luckily it didn't happen, and it became just a gift that people have been sharing on social media since. You know, just how impressed they were with that dude. Because Roman's a hell of an athlete, and yeah, I mean, he's always had great height on that, but that's probably the best one he's ever had. So they traded offense here. Good solid stuff. Shane's involved. Shane gets involved with the referee, pulls him out. And it looks like Shane injured the referee in doing so. He put a little too hard on that leg. And then went for the coast-to-coast. And the one thing I will say about Roman here, Roman didn't lean in probably like he should have. So that coast-to-coast looked kind of funky. But still, it wasn't enough to get the win, though. Drew got the Claymore kick. Reigns came out with the Superman punch, tossed Shane out, speared Drew, got the win. And they kind of on commentary hinted at this was the end of this, that Roman Reigns is now going to move on to something new and fresh, when we all know that's not going to happen. But it was interesting to hear them say that. So, yeah, I thought this was a really good match. And like I said, better WrestleMania. So, what were your thoughts?
Good match. Very good one. You know, I think it started a little bit slow, and McIntyre, you know, kind of had run in some holds for a little bit too long for my taste at times. But I thought they really got to a great closing stretch, and the Shane involvement was fun, and there were some nice near falls at the end. And Roman has the fans behind him a lot of the time. Like, they've managed to.
This was kind of more split for a while there, though, than it has been.
Sure.
I mean, there were more Roman sucks chants and this, that, and the other. But
I really thought he had a good reaction tonight. You know, I don't think he's the most over guy in terms of babyface reactions. You know, really even that close. But I thought that he had a more noticeable and audibly loud fan base, which is nice. And I think he's had that since he's been back.
Yes.
You know, whether it was because of, you know, his illness or what, you know, I think they've booked him against the person that's smart to book against, which is Shane McMahon.
Yes.
And Drew McIntyre, who, as much as you and I might love Drew, he's not particularly over, you know, right now.
No, he's not.
So you know, I think they've gave him some good opponents. You know, the real test is if you give him, you know, have him, you know, in a feud with Seth or something like that. You know, I mean, of course, I think he'd be cured over to Seth, but that's just an example of, you know, how things might go once he moves into another bigger program. Good match. This program's not over. I suspect he and Shane will have one big singles match, maybe at SummerSlam, to end it all.
That's the end game. I mean, my opinion is Brock's going to take out Kofi. Roman's going to go over Shane. And Brock and Roman are going to be the big feud for when they start on Fox.
There you go.
I think they have to. That's what they have to do. So
right.
We'll see. But yeah, I mean, they're going. Shane. There was rumors they were going to do a handicap match at Extreme Rules, but Shane announced they're going to do it on Raw Monday night. So we'll see if that's a setup for maybe another handicap match at Extreme Rules. So yes, this feud is not over. I will say the one thing about this feud, though, is at least it's got the Revival back on track.
Yes. Scott Dawson stealing Drew McIntyre's money.
Yeah, and got them, you know, aligned with Shane and Drew, and makes them look, you know, made them look good again. They got the tag titles back. So, yeah, that's good for them in that way. That worked out. It's funny, you know, we look at what was going on 2 months ago. We had Ricochet jobbing to Robert Roode and the Revival and the Usos and their little comedy deal. And now, hey, Ricochet's U.S. champion, pinning Samoa Joe, and Revival's the tag champions. So things can change pretty quickly in the WWE.
Yep.
All right, next is where the show changes. Our two last matches. WWE Championship inside the steel cage. Kofi Kingston defending against Dolph Ziggler. Now, I've never been a fan of the Kofi-Dolph rivalry. I didn't care for it in 2009. I don't care for it in 2019. I didn't watch Super Showdown. I was at work. I ain't watched it since. I really don't. I mean, I had no interest in this feud. I think this feud has taken Kofi down a peg. You know he's winning, but I think it's taken him down a peg from where he was at. This match was way too fucking long. It just lost me at a point, and I just like was sitting there watching it, like, when is this going to end? When are we going to be done? it just kept going and going and going and going. And I mean, they were out there. I mean, they were working hard. They were doing their thing, but it was just like, you know, and finally when the match ends, and it had a really good finish as Dolph was trying to crawl out the cage door and Kofi just ran and leaped through the second rope to touch the floor first. So I like the finish, but good God almighty, I am sick and tired of Kofi and Dolph, and it looks like we're going to get an amalgamation of this again in the Extreme Rules, but Jesus Christ. And then, I don't know if you know this, but you know the scuttlebutt is that they're going to do the New Day turn, and supposedly I've heard the SummerSlam match could be Kofi and Xavier versus Big E and Dolph. I mean, I don't know about that one, but what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
My problem with WWE cage matches is that they have this stupid thing where they decide that they're going to have pinfall, submission, and escape, which is a terrible idea, and it always drives me insane. So you can never really have a truly great cage match in WWE, ever. Not to mention there's no blood, you know, which annoys me for cage matches. Sorry, it does. I know why they don't do it. I respect why they don't have blood in WWE, but it annoys me. That's just what it is. I actually thought it was well worked, and I thought they worked hard, as you mentioned, and the finish is great. But, you know, it was too long, and a Kofi Kingston and a Dolph Ziggler feud is always going to be like mid-card fodder, unimportant bullshit to me. So I couldn't. I actually got into the match, but I couldn't take it seriously, if that makes sense. Yeah. Seriously as a WWE title main event type match. Yeah, you know, this feud going on is not going to help anybody. A Big E and Dolph reunion feuding with Kofi and Xavier. I really hope they don't go that route. But WWE, you know, always thinks that they have to break everybody up and every group and everybody has to break up at least once, which doesn't make any sense. I've never understood that. But that's just how they are. I hope it doesn't happen. You know, it's been a fear of mine for a while, even before Kofi was, you know, looking to win the title. There have been rumors for a long time that the New Day were going to break up for one reason or another, or for one feud or one story or another. This is another one of those times where that could be the case. I hope not.
Yeah. But it looks like that's what's going to happen. You know, they're not going to be able to help themselves.
Yeah, I know.
And it's not.
It'll happen one day.
Yeah. So. I don't know. We'll see. And God, Dolph. It just doesn't work. It's just not working.
No, it doesn't.
The guy was gone for you know, as long as he's gone, still nobody cares. So. It is what it is. All right, after the match, we got the Drew-Shane thing where they announced that the handicap match is on Raw. Then we have our final match. Seth Rollins defending Universal Heavyweight title against Baron Corbin with a special guest referee of Baron Corbin's choosing. Now, the whole deal was Seth has been beating up all the referees with the steel chair and making their life hell, all the candidates. So, he's going to be ready to do that again to whoever came out. So, there's sign number one. Sign number two, Michael Cole. As soon as Seth came out, was very vocal about Becky Lynch retaining her title early on against Lacey Evans and her how she is Seth Rollins' girlfriend. And there's sign number two. So, Baron Corbin grabs the mic, announces the special guest referee was Lacey Evans. So, you know, and it was noted that, well, Rollins ain't gonna attack Lacey with a chair. So that plays into a lot of different things here. One, Baron Corbin was smart and picked the right person. Two, Lacey Evans, you know, has been a feud with Seth Rollins' girlfriend, so she's going to be on Baron Corbin's side no matter what. So, and three, Seth can't hit her because that'd be man against woman violence, and we can't have that in WWE. So, it was just so, like, against what WWE normally does in this situation. It's very creative for them. Now, the problem is, Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans have about the same appeal to the fans, you know, on each side. So the fans here at this show did not like this one bit. Lots of chants. We had the boring chant. This is stupid. AEW, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan. So we got all the chants going on. As the match is going on, the match is okay. It's fine. You know, they're just having their match. It just kept going and going and going and going. And you're wondering, okay, when's Becky going to show up? Well, they make it a no count out match because Rollins put Corbin through a table. So he can't win by count out. Then they do a no DQ match as Corbin's beating Seth up with the chair. And that's what triggered the fans to go into a Becky chant. So Seth's finally, I mean, he's doing all he can to beat Corbin, but Lacey won't count for various reasons. And Ron's got in her face. So she slapped him hard twice. Kicked him and then gave him a low blow. She attacked this man's testicles. That's it. That Becky comes flying out of that because, God forbid, Becky needs that man's balls intact. So Becky comes.
Well, that's all he has, apparently.
Oh, well, okay. That and his word.
Sorry. Sorry. That
his balls and his word. Oh, I got you. Well, maybe he's a grower, not a shower. I don't know. But so Becky comes out. Corbin hit the end of days on Rollins as this is happening. So Corbin has Rollins ready for the pin. Becky comes out, goes after Lacey, so it's no DQ. So this is perfectly legal. So Becky's beating the shit out of Lacey on the floor, hits the Bexploder, a safe Bexploder on the floor, by the way, I noticed. And then they had to have a new referee, and all of a sudden the new referee was John Cone, the referee who was the referee for Super Showdown. So add another layer to the story. And Rollins made a comeback, hit the curb stop for the pin. Becky and Seth hugged and celebrated. Becky slapped him on his ass, held the ropes open for him. They're so cute together. They're what John Cena and Nikki Bella could have been if John Cena wasn't John Cena. I imagine Nikki Bella watching this and thinking to herself, why? why wasn't this me? I could have been me. But the thing is, like I said, Corbin and Lacey are not liked at all by the internet fans. But you know what? When the finish happened, this match, the fans that were chanting all that shit went crazy. They went nuts. So, you know, that exactly went the way that they wanted it to go in the end. So it is what it is. The thing about Corbin and Lacey is, they're so good at being heels that it's different for the new age wrestling fan base to really get into that. Because normally the heels that they're into are like these snarky heels that they could cheer like as baby faces. And Corbin and Lacey are not, I mean, you don't want to cheer them because they're so heelish. I mean, that's the thing. So it is what it is. I enjoyed this better than the fucking cage match. I'll tell you that. So, what's your thoughts on all the stuff going on here?
Yeah, it was a smart booking, a fun booking, a fun sports entertainment style main event. We haven't had one of those quite like this in a while. But the special guest ref and whatnot. a lot of fun. Thought they did a cool job of progressing it to where Lacey was definitely biased, but closer to calling it down the middle. And you know,
she didn't bash Count Corbin.
You know, sure she did, but you know, it was, you know, she was, you know, certainly on Corbin's side from the beginning, but slowly but surely it had gotten worse and worse and worse throughout the match. I thought that was a good little deal they did there. You know, the Becky pop was huge. Good finish with John Cone. Nicely done. Nice little bow there. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. You know, it was the least shocking thing in the world when the fans were doing their typical chants because they don't like Corbin and Lacey. But you know, like you said, they bought into it by the end, like everybody else did, and it was a lot of fun. I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it was entertaining. And like I said, they were telling the story that if you just, you know, paid attention and got your, you know, irrational hatred of Corbin and Lacey out of the way, you would understand what the hell was going on. And it's just something that was so different from WWE. WWE does not acknowledge relationships. And the fact that they've been doing this lately, again, should have been the sign that they're turning this into an angle. And of all the pay-per-views you're going to do a mixed tag team match on, that's going to be Extreme Rules. Because in a WWE's eyes, that's extreme for a man and woman to be teaming up with each other. How often do you see a mixed tag match in WWE? Very rare.
Very rare.
Is the last one Cena, Nikki against Miz and Maryse?
On the main roster? Yeah. The mixed match challenge might
be the mixed match challenge. You're right. That's right. They had a whole show of those. So I didn't, right. But that was a whole different deal.
Well, we are forgetting one very important one. Triple H and Stephanie versus Kurt Angle.
There you go. Again. Yeah, you're right. And did Zelina and Andrade have one against some?
Yeah, I think they did. Didn't they have one against Rusev and Lana?
So it happens.
Yeah.
But not in like a main event type deal like this. With your main, like your two main baby faces other than Roman Reigns on the whole roster who are going out together. But
right.
Yeah. It's interesting. Definitely interesting, and it's gonna be quite the match where when they have that Extreme Rules, when they announce and everything to see Seth and Becky as a tag team. So that worked out, but it just, I guess the way the fans were, you know, reacted to it. And again, Corbin and Lacey, it ain't just Tacoma, Washington. That's just going on. So
no,
there is something to that. Whether we think they're doing a good job as a heel or not, it's not doing business. You know what I'm saying? So
no.
You got to look at it from the business sense too. So I don't know. We'll see. All right. Now let's figure out where we stand on this show. So thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. Where are you at?
I'm going to go thumbs in the middle. I think it exceeded expectations. I don't think a lot of people were looking forward to this one. And I think the undercard delivered pretty well. And a couple of matches ended up being really, really good. And the main event was, you know, fairly satisfying. So I'm going to give it a thumbs in the middle. Not quite a thumbs up, because I don't think, you know, it's going to be that memorable of a show in the long run. And there wasn't anything that was like a show steal, like a real big time show stealer. But it was definitely a solid show.
Yeah, it was fine. Thumbs in the middle is about right. For sure that, you know, I didn't have a whole hell of a lot of interest in, you know, going into it from television. I knew it would be okay in ring. But yeah, it was fine until the last couple of matches where everything kind of changed. So I know a lot of people say, this was a 2000 WCW type deal where, you know, or 99 WCW where you have, you know, the undercard is, you know, had this great match and then you get to the main events. Hey, you know, sometimes that's how it goes.
these matches, I mean, hell, even Dolph Kofi's work better than some of those 99, 2000 WCW main events.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So,
but,
yeah, I know a lot of people are sky has fallen WWE, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, yeah, hey, listen,
right.
Their money's coming hand over fist. So that's what's in, on their minds right now. So we'll see what happens as we go along. But we got another show in 3 weeks with Extreme Rules. So we got a quick turnaround. And then we'll have a long, let's see, what SummerSlam is on the
10th? No, 11th.
Okay, see, 11th of August. So basically a full month. So.
Right. And worth noting, I guess somewhat, AEW's third show, Fight for the Fallen, is the same weekend as Extreme Rules.
That's right.
This year. Fight for the Fallen's on Saturday, and then Extreme Rules on Sunday.
Should be interesting. So we'll see for what sure. happens on that regard. What do you think about real quick while we got the time? There sure is a lot of people, and I know, I understand it is what it is, but, you know, Finn Balor's not on the show. He's Intercontinental Champion. Revival, of course, being Tag Champion, is not on the show on Raw. There's other people. AJ was there, but doing this little cameo thing. You think that's, you know, it's good to mix it up and have, you know, not every, you know, the same people be on the shows? Or, I mean, where do you stand on all this?
I think people need to be on TV more.
Well, the wild card rules definitely changed
but
that.
But I don't think, right,
especially
exactly.
for SmackDown.
But I don't think people have to be on pay per views every time, and I'm fine with that. They do need to be on TV. You know, that's a major issue. This wild card rule has created a major problem with exposure with wrestlers. Overexposure with about the same 12 wrestlers, and underexposure in the sense, really in the extreme sense, of like 10 to 15 people who literally haven't been on television in a month, except for maybe once.
I mean, the thing about Buddy Murphy has not appeared at all but like one little skit. Aleister Black has done the same talking segment every week since he joined SmackDown. Ben Balor's not kind of a champion, and he's barely on.
Asuka and Kairi just came back.
Yeah, did for a little vignette.
Last week.
Yep. So, the wild card rule. We're going to have to deal with this as long as we have to. I think once they get on Fox, that's over with. Because I can see Fox being like, we don't want anybody that's on our show being on USA Network. I can definitely see that being a thing. So, unless it's a special circumstance. So, we'll have to deal with this as long as we can. But, yeah, it's another one of those things that WWE is just screwing around with that's, you know, kind of frustrating. So, we'll see how that goes along. All right, we'll be back in 3 weeks for Extreme Rules. So, we thank you for listening. And that for Devin, this is Chris, and so long from the Peach State of Georgia.
I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows, you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, boots? Start walking.
Mercy. personal consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into the topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.